Yeah, I said, hey, if Bray Wyatt shows up in person tonight, even if I'm wrong, this is a night where I would be fucking ecstatic to be wrong. Hell fucking yeah. He is officially back, everyone. Not Bad Bunny, not Aleister Black, not Baron Corbin in a different form. Bray Wyatt is officially back. Interesting how they went off the air like that, because if you tuned in to last night's predictions that we did for Extreme Rules, you know, what was the one question that I pointed out that no one online has talked about over the last 4 weeks? You know, when I posted this and said it, a lot of people were very surprised, like, holy shit, I didn't think about that. Not to mention that Friday was the first time that the White Rabbit was actually shown on television. All the teasers were always online on social media and the website, not on TV. But as we said yesterday, closing out the predictions, okay, he returns. Who is he going to feud with? Who's he going after first? That's something that, if you really think about it, most of us were like, we don't give a shit. Bring him back. Bring him back. Under Triple H, they will right a lot of the wrongs. You know, it's not going to be Roman Reigns. Could it be Seth Rollins? Could it be Edge? We don't know. The bottom line is Bray Wyatt is back. And this is your WWE Extreme Rules recap and a little review, hosted by yours truly, Don Tony. I want to thank you all for joining me. I tell you, I have probably 70 or 80 screenshots that I've been putting together during the entire night just to try to visually show you a little bit as we go along talking. Overall, Extreme Rules, you know, if Bray Wyatt did not return, I don't know how people would have really graded this event. I mean, it had its high points. It had its low points. It had a little bit of lull in between. Overall, I enjoyed it very, very much. Started off on fire, closed out on fire, and we're going to get into it. Now, as we did yesterday, we will do it again tonight. Any super chats or super thanks that come in, not only will I match them tonight, but we will donate all of it on Monday to the GoFundMe, the Memorial Fund for Sarah Lee, who passed away, I believe on, Saturday? Oh, Friday, at the age of 30. Absolutely terrible. And I see that two already came in, so I will definitely acknowledge you both in a little bit. And if any of you out there want to donate directly to the GoFundMe, I made up a tiny URL link to make it easier to remember. It's tinyurl.com/RIP Sarah Lee. So, all right. You know, we were kind of like wondering yesterday who Bray Wyatt would interact. And the one thing that we were kind of concerned about was, are they going to revisit this? You know, you think about Bray Wyatt's history, probably John Cena, his most notable feud of them all. We've had some awesome moments with Bray Wyatt. We've had some horrible moments with Bray Wyatt. But if you think about The Fiend's debut, going after Finn Balor, and then you got Finn Balor and Bray Wyatt, who went against each other a few times, and we were wondering, is he going to show up during Edge versus Balor? Is he going to show up during Seth versus... If you really think about it, he showed up on nobody's match. So the bottom line is Bray Wyatt has returned. Really, really cool. And I know we're jumping ahead, but I don't think anybody really cares. You know, we had the Fight Pit match close out Extreme Rules. And, you know, Michael Cole telling us, you know, thank you for tuning in and everything. Now, you know, they're not going off the air without giving us something, you know, really specific, because they showed that video from SmackDown a couple of times tonight. They showed it on the pre-show. It interrupted a few things right at the beginning of Extreme Rules. We saw it. So we knew something was still happening. We didn't believe Michael Cole. And then what happens? The lights go out. Everybody turns their lights on their phones. And then we start hearing, He's got the whole world in his hands. Very, very, you know, almost like Johnny Cash-like. If anybody, you know, ever tuned into his music. I was never a fan of Johnny Cash, but I think some people will know what I'm talking about. Then we get some spotlights. Now, unfortunately, because I'm doing this literally right after Extreme Rules goes off the air, I didn't have a chance to get every screenshot, but we get one screenshot, and there's Huskus the pig. Then we get another screenshot, and it's Sister Abigail. It's, you know, Mercy the Buzzard. It's Ramblin' Rabbit. Very, very warped version of Ramblin' Rabbit. And even at ringside, we had The Fiend. Now, I think a lot of people thought this was Bray Wyatt. But I tell you, you know, the crowd really, really was into it. That's why I opened up the show. Look, we're not going to get hit with copyrights because we hear a holy shit chant. But the crowd was eating it up. That Philly crowd made it even cooler to witness. But we have all variations of Bray Wyatt on our screen. Kind of gave me flashbacks to WrestleMania, the cinematic match with him versus John Cena. And I know it caused controversy at that time. But if you remember that night for WrestleMania, that weekend, when we were doing the Don Tony and Kevin Castle show at that time, you know, Kev's favorite match of the two cinematic was AJ Styles versus Undertaker. For me, my favorite cinematic match was John Cena versus Bray Wyatt because it was so, even though there was only one wrestling move, the whole entire, you know, whatever you want to call it, it was only one move, but it was like, I don't do drugs. I take painkillers for pain, but if I felt like tripping, like I would want to watch the John Cena Bray Wyatt cinematic. You know, if I was tripping, because I think I would just bug out. It was more about psychology than anything else. And, you know, to see, you know, hear the variations of Firefly Funhouse, I am so happy that he did not come out with Alexa Bliss. Please do not interpret that as any knock on Alexa Bliss. Anybody that tunes into the show knows we are fans of Alexa Bliss. It was just too soon. You know, she gets squashed by a ladder on Monday. You know, there's no transformation. There's no attitude. There's no hints. There's no this. You know, so having him come out tonight, I know we wanted more. I know we probably would love to see him get into, but the fact that he's back is good enough. And, you know, we kind of hit the nail on the head. As far as his outfit, if you've been paying attention to these shows the last couple of weeks, the question that's been asked to me over and over and over again is, what is he going to look like when he returns? Is he going to be under a mask? Is it going to be a variation of The Fiend? And I even said it last night that when he comes back, I think he will walk down the rampway wearing a mask, but he will take it off. And I also said I don't believe that the Hawaiian stuff is coming back. I think he will dress in dark colors, maybe a little bit of leather. You know, no BDSM, as somebody said yesterday, but, you know, just a really dark Bray Wyatt. But also, I believe Bray Wyatt is going to be a hardcore babyface. Not babyface, where everything is cake and ice cream, but he is going to beat the fuck out of people that we want to see him beat the fuck out of. So he comes out. And there he is right there. Now the mask, there's the mask. And if you pay attention to Bray Wyatt's Twitter account over the last year and a half, we've seen a variation of that before, but he comes out, everybody is losing his shit. He takes the mask off, reveals that it's him. And we go off the air just like that. You don't have to reinvent the wheel with Bray Wyatt. You just make the wheel better. You look at cars in the early 1900s, and you see the wheel at that time. We still drive with wheels. But the wheels of today, the tires of today, you know, it's so much better than what it used to be. So you don't have to change too much with Bray Wyatt. You know, all you got to do is change the outcomes in a lot of situations with him, but let him you know, dictate a lot of this. Triple H, you know, this is probably, you know, look, it's still so early to really evaluate Triple H. You know, there's a new car scent. You know, when you buy a brand new car, it smells new, it rides, you know. But after a while, that new car scent goes away. And that's really the test of, you know, if you enjoy it or something is good. So it's still way too early. But the one thing that sticks out to me more than anything with Triple H, and it's not the renewed energy. The renewed energy is cool. You know, the hope that a lot of people have is cool. Maybe a little added pressure onto AEW and others. And that's not to besmirch them in any way. If they have to amp it up a little bit, you know, us as wrestling fans, we reap the rewards. When companies get complacent, that's when we suffer as a result. But the one thing out of everything with Triple H, since he is now at the helm, the one thing that makes me the most excited is the fact that he's allowing wrestlers to come up with their own creative ideas, and he is listening to all of them, and he is letting people, you know, that he trusts to go with it, and let's see what happens. And let me tell you something, man. You know, that's why some people, I think, sometimes love the indies as far as wrestling goes, because the indies is where wrestlers can be the most creative, have the most amount of freedom. Now, sure, when you work for WWE or AEW or a big company, there's always that competition. So it's cool that you can have a little bit of your own creative input. But if it sucks or if it falls flat, you know, that could be a make or break. You know, you don't want to embarrass a major company you work for. So the fact that Triple H is allowing Bray Wyatt, Wyndham, to give so much input. You know, this is something that we've been talking about the last couple of weeks. Sure, they hired a guy from Marvel, and he did stuff with the White Rabbit, but understand, and this is something we all got to remember, a lot of what we have seen as a build to now was the mind of Bray Wyatt. You know, for the last year plus that he has not been in WWE, he hasn't been sitting around and just worried about doing a movie. You know, this guy has been planning his either return or debut somewhere else. And, man, it's a good feeling. Now, I think what we're going to do this week, maybe we'll do it next Monday because it's so soon. I have so many Bray Wyatt, you know, fiends, you know, Firefly Funhouse. I have so many of these gift boxes. I probably have about 15 or 20 of them. And I've said this before, of all the merchandise that I have collected in the last 10 years, Bray Wyatt, it's not even close. Bray Wyatt is number one as far as stuff that we have. And I have been, these have been building up in my office for a couple of years. So I think we're going to have one night, maybe next Monday, where we'll have a boatload of giveaways and give away a whole bunch. Now, unfortunately, like in the case of these, they're shirts inside. They're brand new. Like, I don't want to start like taking it apart, but they're brand new. They're sealed close. You know, this is a shirt. But the problem is some of these may not be your size. So, you know, if you win it, maybe you give it to someone else. Maybe you keep it. You put it on eBay. We got, and it's not just this holiday variation. We have all different ones. So, all right. We also have the imminent return of Charlotte Flair. Charlotte Flair, they did a video package today. People are wondering, will we see her on Raw and on SmackDown for a little while? We have a new women's champion. Very unexpected. In fact, I think that was the only match that I got wrong tonight. Liv Morgan, no longer the SmackDown women's champion. Now, look, I understand there are people out there that feel her run was an absolute failure. I wish they would define failure a little bit. Because the thing that I think some people need to understand, and yes, I am defending Liv Morgan to an extent right now, is that Liv Morgan, we knew what she could do and what she couldn't do. All right, just hear me out for a second. We knew what Liv Morgan could and could not do. when she won Money in the Bank, crowd went bonkers. We did not know that she was going to cash in that night. But even before that, you go back further, you know, there was a lot of people out there that were really pulling for Liv. You know, remember, you know, the crying afterwards, and I'm not saying that as a joke, but very, very emotional. A lot of people wanted that moment. So when Liv Morgan won Money in the Bank and won the championship, you know, we already knew what she can do. So it wasn't like, okay, now I have the briefcase, now I'm going to turn into the next Sasha Banks or Charlotte Flair or something like that. And I think the problem is, you know, people's expectations were way too high. And I don't think anybody would disagree when I say this. I think Liv Morgan is doing better now in the ring than before she won the briefcase. Would anybody truthfully disagree with that? I don't think so. So Liv Morgan, she brought what we already knew that she had. I think what happened was her rise was very, very emotional for a lot of people, and they were rooting for her, not thinking, all right, she won the title. Oh, wait, is she really ready? You know what I mean? When you think about it, it's a lot like Jade Cargill. Jade Cargill is still extremely new in wrestling, and there's so many people, inspirational, this and that, role model, blah, 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 and, you know, but now you see some of the matches, and people like, you know, I don't know if she's ready. Well, too late. Too late. You know, you get to that point, now you got to do what you can. And listen, I'm also a Ronda Rousey fan. Ronda Rousey, I think, is finally starting to get her groove. You know, we have commented about Ronda Rousey like a human sleeping pill, human Xanax, the last 7 months, you know, prior to when Triple H took over. Do you remember the night that we felt Ronda Rousey was turning a corner, when she started getting cocky in the ring, when she started showing, being animated? That's what she did a couple of years ago. You know, when she started feuding with Charlotte Flair, when she started getting animated, that's when people started digging, and that's where she found her groove. Is she a heel right now? Not really, but she's kind of acting like one. You know, the cheers, she soaks in. The jeers, she plays into it. She trolls people. Even tonight when she won, you know, some people who were booing, you know, she was feeding into that. So, but Ronda Rousey, you know, the first two matches, you know, not all that spectacular. So, you know, it takes two to tango. So I think people were a little bit too hard on Liv Morgan, but obviously she's no longer the champion. Charlotte Flair is about to return. And as we said last night, just when we thought Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar was never going to happen again after WrestleMania, we get it for SummerSlam. And just when we thought that Charlotte Flair and Ronda Rousey, no reason to revisit that again, we may be getting it again. So, all right. What'd you all think of Daniel Cormier tonight? What'd you think? I had to do it, everyone. Complete with the WWE logo. Yes, I did that. No disrespect to Daniel Cormier. Trust me, I have a belly too. I wear black shirts so you can't see it. So you can't see my saggy tits. But, you know, I'm reading people online tonight that truthfully think that this guy could fight Brock Lesnar. You think they're bringing him in for Brock Lesnar? Yeah, maybe if you're going to have like a competition on who eats the most ribs. You know, Daniel Cormier looks like he's enjoying his retirement. I'm not making fun of the guy. But honestly, I don't see this guy wrestling in any way, shape, or form. In fact, personally, I probably would have rather seen Ken Shamrock or someone else be the special guest referee. By the way, for those who were asking to me earlier, who narrated, you know, the package for Seth Rollins and Riddle? That was Ariel Helwani, who obviously is a major player in, you know, in media with sports. So he was the one that did that commentary. But Daniel Cormier, I don't think wrestling fans really cared. I don't think UFC fans tune in just because he was reffing tonight. He didn't get physical. As I showed you, you know, he got in the face of Seth Rollins a little bit, but, you know, that was the furthest we were going to get. By the way, very, very cool tonight. You know, we're in Philly for Extreme Rules. You know, I'm not part of them. all of us, we're watching Extreme Rules, which took place in Philly. That sounds a little more like it. And the home of Extreme. Hey, I worked for ECW for the last year, you know, pushing tickets to my hotline. So, but this is WWE. It's not ECW. So I can't bail myself out on that one. Seth Rollins paying a little tribute, a little homage tonight to Rob Van Dam. And if you thought that, nah, maybe it's just, you know, just a different outfit. No, when he climbed the pit and he dove off and did a splash onto Riddle, he went Seth freaking Rollins. So I like that. I like the homage tonight to Rob Van Dam. Very, very cool. Very, very cool. A lot of references to ECW tonight, which was nice as well. I'm just giving you some quick thoughts before we get into match by match. So that's why we're going back and forth a little bit. Bayley, hopefully Bayley did not suffer any damage to her mouth. All right. I don't know if you all saw Extreme Rules when you're watching my recap right now. Some people tune into my recap and that'll give them the decision if they want to watch it or not. My early answer to you is yes, go check it out. But we had a spot where Bianca Belair hit a KOD on Bayley, and what happened was Bayley had picked up a ladder. I have the clip for you. And while Bayley still had the ladder, you had Bianca Belair actually to the KOD. Now, you know, I know this is a little annoying for those that watch these videos, but I have to do it this way so we don't get hit with any copyright issues. I have contacted WWE so many times in the last 2.5 years. Is it right if I put this? Is it right if I put that? And they tell me, look, don't put more than 3 seconds. Don't do this. You could do that, but don't do this. So, you know, they tell me what is okay and what's not. And I've always said that for a lot of people that do shows out there that always bitch and complain on social media. Oh, I got flagged from this person or AEW. You know, you notice none of them ever ask in advance, hey, is it okay if I put a little this and that? If they tell you no, you respectfully say, okay, no problem. But a lot of times, if you get somebody to respond to you, they will tell you what your limitations are, and you work around that. That's why if you watch some videos on YouTube, you'll see people posting matches that are like 1.5 times as fast as far as the speed, or it's heavily edited, or they put it reversed. You know, those are ways to avoid copyright issues. It cannot be perfect. So that's why I pause it once in a while. But watch the KOD. Now, watch Bayley's face. Watch her face. Boom! I know it's quick, everyone. I know it's quick. Have no fear. I took a screenshot. It looked like her mouth bounced off the edge of the ladder. And after the match was over, you could see Bayley like holding the bottom of her mouth. So I didn't see any blood. You know, she wasn't writhing in pain that it was something major, but something, you know, just to keep on your mind because she may have suffered a little bit of an injury from that. That was kind of rough. I know a lot of people may not have seen that. So Beth Phoenix tonight, you know, is she going to ultimately have a match against Rhea Ripley? Maybe WrestleMania. I know that sounds so far away, but what went down tonight, Beth Phoenix has to be out for an extended period of time. I got to be totally honest with you. I thought the I Quit match tonight was awesome. You know, I forget how awesome I Quit matches are when you have very emotional, outspoken, deep, powerful voices. You know, even those that whine and scream, because it's not just the idea that you have to have your opponent say, I quit. But it's all the times that they don't quit. You know, I mean, early on with Finn Balor, you know, it was kind of like, because they're like, Finn, do you quit? No. No. Oh, that's not like very energetic. Then later on, he got into it, you know, and Edge with a couple of his remarks, you know, so that made it much better. But, you know, Finn Balor defeats Edge and only because he thought the Judgment Day were going to show mercy on Beth Phoenix. Now, we'll get into the match a little further in a moment, but I ask you all this question. how does Edge get his revenge on the Judgment Day after this? You know, Edge was taken out and was gone for 6 weeks or whatever it was. Now they took out Beth. So Edge has got to avenge this and avenge it to a level that even we wouldn't think. Where do you think that's going to happen? When is it going to happen? So I'm starting to think we may end up getting this at WrestleMania. We may end up getting Edge and Beth Phoenix versus Rhea Ripley and Damian Priest, or Rhea Ripley and Finn Balor. I think that could be a possible match for WrestleMania. I think they're going to write Beth Phoenix off, you know, serious injury. Like, you don't want to see her, you know, an update. You don't want to hear, she's doing better. She's okay. You know, the longer that she is out in storyline without an update, the more of a revenge that Edge needs to get on these people. But what does Edge do in the meantime? So that's a big question you got to think about. Survivor Series, way too soon. And you're not going to do that, especially when you have two War Games matches. Because that kind of revenge, you know, I think War Games kind of like overshadows that. So we had a few people in attendance tonight. They showed Bron Breakker during the Fight Pit main event tonight. He was in the crowd. And also, Bayley and Bianca Belair, we saw Nikita Lyons in the crowd. I know some people are probably a little disappointed at my screenshot only because, you know, I couldn't catch the cleavage shot. I didn't have enough time. So sorry, everybody. Speaking of screenshots, I don't know if you all saw this. I already had some fun with it on social media. During the Bianca Belair Bayley match, and you know, it's interesting because the early reaction I saw online is that either people really loved it or didn't like it at all, you know, because early on, you know, it seemed like something really was missing there. And during the early parts of the match, WWE just like flashes on this woman in the crowd. And they kept the camera on her for a couple of seconds. Now, my first thought was, oh, maybe that's Bianca Belair's mom. And then I was like, wait, no, I don't think she looks like this was just a random fan. And people were just running with this online. So I was joking around. I'm like, that's the look you have when you go to DMV and you have number 16 as your ticket. Or no, they call number 16 and you have number 99 on your ticket. Like, that's the look you have. That's the look you have when you drop $280 to go see AEW and the guy next to you only paid $6 on StubHub. That's the look you get. That's the look you get when you realize you go on a first date and he or she wants to go to the most expensive restaurant. So that was such a weird camera shot, you know, and it was just random. It was just random out of nowhere. So, you know, I had to snatch that shit up. Tell me you don't feel that way. You go to Motor Vehicles and you get the ticket. Ooh, I'm number 11. And then you look and they're like, they're up to like 941. They're like, wait, how many number 11? Oh, no, they go back to zero when they hit 1,000. And then you realize you have like 70 people ahead of you. So, Karrion Kross, Drew McIntyre. Okay. Everybody knows Karrion Kross, friend of the family. I root for him, but I don't sugarcoat things either, you know. And I personally think that he absolutely loves that about people. He wants people to be straight up and honest what they think about some of his work. They don't want somebody that says to him before even his Impact days, oh, you should be main event at WrestleMania, you know. He ain't going to blow you, you know, for saying that. Karrion Kross, I think the problem with tonight's match is you can't go methodical with Karrion Kross right now as far as a match goes. The psychology is awesome, all right? The pre-recorded segments are awesome, but he's not going to do high flying shit. But my point is, you can't have a very, very slow paced match because fans are not into him like that right now. Sheamus, you know, there was a time where Sheamus would have these very slow, methodical matches and the crowd would get bored. Who remembers the infamous night with him and Randy Orton and everybody started doing the wave, chanting Michael Cole, JBL, you know, this match sucks. You know, so the thing, the strap match on paper sounded like a great idea. And let me tell you something. You get whipped with a strap. Trust me, I'm Italian and I'm older, which means that when I was a kid, you know, I got whipped with the strap from my dad, you know, and trust me, one shot hurts. You get hit 47 times tonight and you tell me how you feel the next day. Those guys whipped the fucking shit out of each other tonight. And towards the latter part of the match, the crowd was getting into it. The problem is when you hit somebody with a strap 50, 60 times, once you get past four or five, you start getting numb of the shots. That's why pepper spray. I mean, you know, there used to be, well, Cops, I think, is still on the air. But anybody remember Live PD? That unfortunately was shut down, you know, after we had a lot of, you know, tragedy, George Floyd and others. You know, there was just so much controversy that, you know, they didn't want to keep it on the air. Now Reels has On Patrol Live, which I'm now addicted to. But you ever see, like, somebody, a cop, pull out pepper spray? You just spray a little drop. You get hit with pepper spray, even just a drop, and you see how they react. You know, Scarlett emptied that whole fucking bottle on Drew McIntyre, and Drew sold it like a champ. And Karrion Kross, props to him, a little residue, and he sold like he got a little bit as well for a moment. But people online, they're like, pepper spray? Pepper spray ended this match? You know, they got so numb to some of the physicality on it, you know, and this is a problem when everything is extreme. You know, so the strap match, even though it hurts, and you're going to see marks and you're going to see visuals and it makes a sound. And these guys were putting it, but unfortunately for that crowd, you know, is not that much invested. So I think when it comes to Karrion Kross right now, I think you have to have more animation in these matches. You know, just taunting Drew McIntyre. I think Karrion Kross has to interact with the fans a little bit more. I think he needs to start, you know, I'm not him, you know, and I'm not WWE creative. I don't know how you do that, but I think there's got to be more of the interaction towards the fans, not towards just your opponent. And I also think with Scarlett, you know, Scarlett, I think, has to be a little bit more like Sherry, Sensational Sherry. You know, if she's going to get involved, she's got to do something and run the fuck away. You got to tease like Drew or somebody's about to get their hands on her. You know, the way it comes across right now, a lot of people say, oh, she kind of reminds me of Sable. And, you know, she ain't going to go into the ring anytime soon. This is for all the men that want me and the girls that want to be like me. You're not going to get that. So she's got to be more sinister. And yeah, I know what you're going to say. Well, you can't get more sinister than pepper spray. But the problem is it's too organized. And I think, you know, the strap match in reflection, I think it was too methodical. The crowd you can't even give the crowd a chance to just, you know, like stand there and let them comprehend stuff. I think if they would have brawled, and here's the problem too, everyone, you know, when you have all different types of gimmick matches for an Extreme Rules theme, there are things that wrestlers are not going to do in their matches because someone else is doing it later on. You use ladders, for example. You got Bayley and Bianca Belair doing a ladder match. You're not going to start whipping out ladders. You know, when you're going to focus on a particular type of style, you can't. So they were very limited. If they would have brawled up and down the arena, I think it probably would have made the match a trillion times more interacted with the fans. Problem is, you saved that for Finn Balor and Edge when they went up the rampway and they went through the underpass, whatever that is. You know, so, you know, the strap match, good idea on paper, I think, just never clicked with the fans. So the good old-fashioned Donnybrook, Jesus, that was awesome. Now, we're not going to talk about what happened on SmackDown with Gunther with the two taps. You know, I know Monday morning quarterbacking, you know, I laughed at people who had no idea about this three-tap Brazilian rule or something like that. You know, once they learned about it, you know, they're telling everyone else, oh, well, that happened because of this. You know, the whole storyline is to get Sheamus that much over with the fans. And Jesus Christ, I mean, Sheamus is so goddamn over right now. And you know what? Somebody sent me this picture tonight. This was after the match was over. And I tell you, you know, I brought this up before. You know, Ridge Holland, anybody that goes back to his days in NXT before even the injury to Johnny Gargano, if you remember that scare. You know, I was a huge fan of Ridge Holland when he hurt his leg. You know, we were really concerned if he was ever going to make it back. But when the injury scare happened with Johnny Gargano and then what happened with Big E, you know, it just, I felt bad for Ridge Holland. I mean, I feel awful for Big E. Don't get me wrong, but I feel bad for the guy because I can only imagine how that must feel to, you know, continue at your job. And you can't help but to think that that guy, you know, in the back of his mind, you know, I might have ruined somebody's career, you know, and that could be devastating for someone. That's emotional torture. And especially you have a, you know, IWC and the, you know, some of the toxicity out there, you know, this has got to be extremely rough. I mean, nothing compared to what Big E is going through. But my point is, when I see pictures like this and he's smiling, and I hear the crowd popping. It's not that they forgot what happened with the Big E injury, but I think they realize by now that, look, accidents do happen. And Ridge Holland is not as a sloppy wrestler, you know, careless as some people tried to make him out to be early on. And I think WWE also always realized that as well. They never took the gas off the guy. He lost a lot of matches, but they still kept throwing him out there. And, you know, to see the crowd pop now and react to it, you know, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to see. All right, let's start organizing this a little bit. And I wanted to put the chat room on the screen tonight. The problem is, you know, I can't, like, really configure it much tonight. But shout out to everybody who is in the chat. Earlier today, in the parking lot and in the back of the building of Wells Fargo, where Extreme Rules took place, WWE had a bunch of white rabbits. Pretty interesting, you know, to see how low that little cotton ball is. But they had a bunch of white rabbits all walking around. And as they were walking around, here's another one that was in the crowd. You know, they had quite a few. You know what was interesting? Chat room. Because I was taking so many screenshots with Bray Wyatt at the very end of the show. Answer me yes or no. When they did the whole montage, when they showed Huskus and they showed The Fiend and they showed Sister Abigail, did they show a bunny? Did they show a bunny? Because I don't recall if they flashed a camera on a bunny. You know, okay, VJ says yes. All right, so probably when I, you know, was taking the screenshots, they flashed the bunny. So, all right, so they did flash the bunny. But they had bunnies, and they were giving this crossword puzzle. They were giving out this crossword puzzle. Now, the funny thing is, I spent a couple of minutes looking at this and trying to find a message. And I'll be honest with you, and I know this is kind of comical, but guys, gals, when, you know, it does spell a few words here and there, but I really couldn't find any really hidden messages. So I'm sure it's written somewhere. But when I started looking up close, you know, I thought, okay, it spells Don Tony and a bunch of hoes. And that, look, am I wrong? Look, we got Don Tony and we have a bunch of hoes. That's the crossword. But I couldn't figure out what the message was. And they were passing it around in the parking lot. So I can only imagine all these fans that were sitting in their seats, like trying to figure out what the hidden message was, but couldn't find anything. Okay, Joey wants to see it one more time. Yeah. On the left, see, look, Don Tony. I know it's not perfect, but Don Tony and a whole bunch of hoes. That's what I came up with. So, all right. I don't know if you saw it tonight, but quite a few people got screenshots, including me. But we got the logo for WrestleMania 40 revealed. They showed it in the building. This was the best screenshot that I could find. Yes, they brought back the Roman numerals. You know, they should always have Roman numerals when you hit, you know, a new decade or a new, you know, whatever you want to call it. So it's WrestleMania XL, extra large. That is WrestleMania 40. So that is the logo for WrestleMania 40. Yeah. Yeah, Philly, the Liberty Bell. You didn't know that WrestleMania 40 is going to be in Philly. That's, remember we said that Paul Heyman should definitely go in the Hall of Fame that year? And we talked about a few others as well. So yeah, WrestleMania 40, Philly. I like it. Very, very classy. Very classy. You don't have to overdo it sometimes, you know? I like it. WrestleMania XL. So let's get into Extreme Rules. This pretty much, you know, we had the Brawling Brutes get the win over Imperium. And, you know, obviously this was the right way to go, especially after the banger that they had back on September 3rd, especially the match that they had on SmackDown, even though there's a controversial finish. This is just going to make the fans want Sheamus to win this championship even more. This is the only title that has eluded Sheamus. And yes, I do believe that Sheamus will ultimately get this championship. You know what's even more fascinating? And I know I'm not the only person that thought about this tonight. You know, yes, Gunther and Sheamus have had two matches. They are going to have more. And we have had Imperium and the Brawling Brutes feud a little bit. You think of Sheamus's Hall of Fame career. And I have said it. Some of my former co-hosts that were on here also said it. A lot of you have said it. Especially over the last 2 or 3 years, Sheamus might arguably be in the top three as far as people who have, you know, amped up their game on television, especially during the Thunderdome era. Sheamus might be one or two. That's how good he has been. And you think about his feuds with Drew McIntyre. You think about his feuds with Daniel Bryan. You think about his feuds that he has had with others. If they go long enough with this, Gunther may end up becoming Sheamus's greatest feud in his career. It is way too early. You don't take, you know, Randy Orton. Randy Orton might be his most notorious foe, you know, because it was Groundhog Day. How many times? They must have fought, what, 50 times? And that might even be a low number. But you realize, and you know, that's, I think, another problem with Drew McIntyre and Karrion Kross. We said it in the last Premium Live event. It should have been Karrion Kross causing Drew McIntyre to lose against Roman Reigns at Clash at the Castle, not Solo Sikoa. Solo Sikoa could have gotten involved still. Solo Sikoa could have showed up after the match, could have gotten involved earlier in the night, and he shows up with the Bloodline, and he would have still fit like a glove. I think if Karrion Kross would have cost Drew McIntyre that match at Clash at the Castle, I think that would have helped with the feud with him and Drew McIntyre. I don't feel the chemistry with those two guys. They are similar in size, and they took a beating against each other. But just because you're similar height, similar size, and you both are very physical and take a beating, that doesn't mean there's chemistry. I don't feel that much chemistry with Drew McIntyre. And this is WWE's fault. We've said this before. WWE's fault with this as well is that when Karrion Kross returned, if you remember the Hourglass Remember, they turned it upside down, and the message was not only for Drew McIntyre, it was also for Roman Reigns. Remember when Sami Zayn got the rotten flowers? But if you look beyond that, Karrion Kross has spent 90% of his time on Drew McIntyre and almost nothing on Roman Reigns. WWE had to include Roman Reigns because Karrion Kross is going after the chosen ones. The problem is they didn't balance it out. So why would Karrion Kross suddenly like get off the radar of Roman Reigns and only focus on Drew McIntyre? And that and him not costing Drew a Clash at the Castle in the end. And this, I don't think the crowd feels it enough. They don't feel this deep, dark hatred against the two, no matter how good the setup has been, no matter how many times they attack each other. But you look at Gunther and Sheamus, they have this incredible, incredible charisma. They click, they gel. Imperium and the Brawling Brutes, they also click and gel. I mean, I'm going to show you a little video clip. It's only about 4 seconds long. This is not one of those GIF files that just repeats over and over again. I mean, this is literally one loop. And this is the chops that Sheamus was taking tonight. I mean, this is not a loop. I mean, he just beat the fuck out of Sheamus. And early on in the match, it was mostly 3-on-1. Imperium early on clears out the ring. They go 3-on-1 to Sheamus. Sheamus, I think, loves the welts on his chest. I think it's a badge of honor. That guy's chest looks like, you know, like exposed meat. It looks like raw meat. I mean, he just beat the living shit out of Sheamus, you know. And then Butch ended up being the victim of 3-on-1. Ridge Holland ended up being the victim of 3-on-1. But towards the latter part of the match, you would get the Brawling Brutes get a little bit of 3-on-1 advantage also. And this right here, Sheamus, I think this is a better look of it. Yeah, there you go. Oh, no, wait, that's Liv Morgan. We're going one step too far ahead. There you go. Sheamus is giving him the chops, you know, to the chest. And Ridge is giving him punches and Butch is giving him kicks. And Gunther, man, his visual, his selling. You know, if you really pay attention closely, that guy, he tries to escape. You know, he doesn't just stand there and just take it and just take it. He flails, his legs are flailing and his arms, and he's trying to get the fuck out of there. And that's something that you and I would probably do. So this has just been awesome. And the crowd thought it was awesome. I mean, Michael Cole said at least 5 times, like, this is just the first match, everyone. This is just the first match, everyone. And it was awesome. We had Ridge Holland do a really cool power move. He had Ludwig Kaiser on his shoulder. He had Giovanni Vinci on his shoulder and dropped both of them. Butch with a very cool-looking moonsault off of a bunch of barrels onto Kaiser and Vinci. Crowd wanted tables. We got tables. Sheamus puts Gunther through a table. But unfortunately, we got the shillelaghs once again. Gunther is brawling with Sheamus in the middle of the ring. And we get a big shillelagh shot onto Sheamus. We think, okay, deja vu all over again. This time we get a 2 count, though. And the Brawling Brutes, as I showed you, they finally got a little bit of 3-on-1 advantage to Gunther. And Gunther's begging, please, no, no, no. And Sheamus whacks Gunther on the shoulder with the shillelagh. Sheamus with a Celtic cross onto Gunther through a table. And Gunther is out. Ludwig Kaiser is out. That just leaves Giovanni Vinci in the ring. And he is in the ring with all 3 members of the Brawling Brutes. You have Butch and Ridge Holland holding Vinci as Sheamus hits the bro kick. 1, 2, 3. Brawling Brutes win. And like I said, they are so tremendously over right now. 15,944 in attendance tonight. And man, really, really awesome opening match. You know, this is a feud. Keep going, man. I know what some people are going to say. All right, let's move on to something else. Honestly, I think either side. You haven't feud with anybody else right now. I think it's a step down. I mean, we're happy that Legato is there, but Legato's going to feud with Hit Row for a little while. They're going to rekindle some of that NXT, you know, brawls that they did back in the day. So we had a couple of video packages tonight. As I said earlier, Charlotte Flair with a video package, Bianca Belair with a video package, hyping up Logan Paul versus Roman Reigns at Crown Jewel. We had a few video packages tonight. We also had a few segments with The Miz and Gritty, who is the mascot for what, the Philadelphia Flyers? And early on, because today is The Miz's birthday, on Monday they're going to do a little celebration on Raw. Apparently The Miz is trying to get in touch with Triple H about something. He's on the phone talking to his wife. Gritty shows up and wants to give Miz a special edition Gritty Extreme Rules shirt. And Miz takes the shirt, throws it on the floor, and he smashes it, and Gritty is looking down, all dejected, very depressed. Now, if you're thinking what I'm thinking, we expected it to be Dexter Lumis under the outfit. I think the problem was Gritty was a little too animated. And I just pictured Dexter Lumis being under that outfit doing that. You know, I don't think it would have kind of, I think Dexter Lumis would just be like this. So we thought early on, and maybe it's Dexter Lumis, but it's not. We get a little bit more later on in the night, and towards the end of the night, we see Miz once again confronted by Gritty. I guess Gritty wants to give him the shirt again, and there you go. Miz starts beating the shit out of Gritty. Oh, just lays the boots to Gritty. Problem is, you know, that's not Dexter Lumis under the mask. So he's kicking him. He's laying boots to him. I know this is the only way I could show you. But what ends up happening behind Miz, there you go. Hurry up. Hurry up. Extending it too long. Cat calls. And there you go. Turns around. Up. There's Dexter Lumis. Turns around. Dexter Lumis chokes him out. Then Dexter Lumis helps up Gritty. So Dexter Lumis, as creepy as Dexter Lumis is, he is tremendously over with the fans. He helps up Gritty, and they walk off. So what happens on Raw Monday, I have no idea. You know, some people think that Gritty's going to end up in a match. No, they're going to be in Brooklyn Monday. They're not staying in Philly. And trust me, if Gritty comes to Brooklyn over here, Gritty will not be over, even if he does team up with Dexter Lumis. Now, look, that wasn't the regular mascot either. And Gritty got a kick on Miz after as well. But that's what we had throughout the night. Liv Morgan versus Ronda Rousey. All right, early on, you know, Liv Morgan, decent reaction from the crowd. Ronda Rousey also decent reaction from the crowd. But Ronda playing up a little bit more the heel heat. I know that there's people out there. You know, it's funny. The majority of people out there that are talking about that Liv Morgan needs to turn heel, most of those loud noises are people that don't like Liv Morgan, that think she sucks. So it's like, okay, if she's a heel now, you know, you dig her. I don't think they turn her heel. I think she just rubs it in the face of haters, like, good, continue hating. Charlotte Flair has got to return as a heel. And would we see Charlotte Flair and Bianca feud? I mean, it's possible, very possible. But I think a lot of us think, you know, Ronda Rousey and Charlotte have a little bit more history, a little bit more trusted history, and they may end up going that route instead. But, you know, Liv Morgan came out with a very cool-looking robe. Do I have a picture of it? Well, shit, I don't. I thought I did. But she came out with the Extreme Rules colors as well. Decent match, but early on, I don't know. There was just, it felt like something was missing between the two of them. Liv comes out with it's actually a wiffle ball bat. Wasn't a full-fledged bat. Trust me, a full-fledged bat, I think it would be a little bit too heavy for them, but trust me, if you've ever played wiffle ball with a wiffle ball bat, get hit with one of those. Those hard plastic yellow ones. This one was painted all different colors. But, you know, early on, you know, the bat came into play a little bit. Michael Cole name drops Jack Swagger and Randy Orton as the first WWE Extreme Rules match back in the day. Liv Morgan attempts a baseball slide. Ronda Rousey's outside the ring. This moment I got a kick out of. Ronda's outside the ring. Liv goes for a baseball slide, and we've seen this numerous times over the year. She pulls the apron forward. Liv gets stuck inside the apron, so Ronda's starting to beat the shit out of Liv. And at one point, she punches Liv, and Liv looks at her and, like, screams, like, you know, she wants more. So Ronda Rousey's like, oh, yeah, okay, no problem. Nails her again. Liv Morgan shut right up. But while this is happening, Liv Morgan gets her hands on a fire extinguisher, whacks, you know, Ronda Rousey with a little bit of the fire extinguisher, that, you know, that gas or whatever that shit that comes out of it. But Ronda ultimately gets the momentum right back, hits Piper's Pit onto Liv, which looked like it legitimately hurt, and some bad shots. And at this moment, I'm like, you know what? The camera work is really, really strong here, but still something felt like it was missing. You know, Liv Morgan starts getting whipped with Ronda Rousey's black belt. We get a table put into play. And early on, Liv Morgan, nice little swanton, putting Ronda through the table. And then we had another moment where Liv picked up Ronda and dropped her. And the table part that she dropped her on, most of it was broken already. And it looked like it kind of legitimately like knocked her for a loop on her head. But unfortunately, towards the end of the match, Liv Morgan gets a submission on Ronda Rousey, but Ronda Rousey reverses it. And as she's got the submission, you got a piece of the table, and it looks like she's got her head wedged, like the pressure from the table. Liv Morgan never taps out. I don't know if any of you watched this part. I thought she was laughing. I thought we were going to hear Michael Cole say, you know, like, she seems like she's enjoying this. She seemed like she was laughing. But she was writhing in pain, apparently, and the pain was too much, and she passed out from the pain. Referee calls for the bell, and Ronda Rousey is your new SmackDown Women's Champion. You know, it was an okay match, but something felt like it was missing. It was all right. It was okay. Let's see what happens now with Ronda Rousey. And let's see who her first challenger is for the title. Well, we know Liv Morgan might get a rematch. The strap match next. You know, I should have put these on the screen. I just realized it. Should have put these on the screen. Yeah, there's your intro. Yeah, we already talked about that. All right, there we go. Drew McIntyre versus Karrion Kross. I know we did a little overview already. You know, early on in the match, you know, they're going to be strapped to each other, but instead they start brawling outside the ring, and they get the strap loose, and they're whipping each other with it. And I think too much ringside. Like I said, they should have maybe brawled into the crowd because the match didn't officially start yet. They could have done a lot more outside the ring, but I think it was just too much depending on whipping, 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 whipping. After a while, you get numb to it. You know, I mean, if you remember when Cody took the Singapore cane shots, MJF, you think about Tommy Dreamer, he took the Singapore cane shots from Sandman. And you look at some people who have taken shots, whether it's a belt, Singapore cane, anything, where you're whipped and you're left with welts. Look at Bianca Belair. Imagine if Bianca Belair whipped Bayley with her hair 45 times in a match. Even if she did it 10 times in a match. The first time you hear that snap, you pop. And if she does it 5 more times, then you don't think it's not as powerful anymore. And that's exactly what happened here. They depended too much on the straps. They're brawling outside the ring. They finally get back inside the ring. You know, you got a little bit of trash talking. Drew McIntyre, you hear him saying to Karrion Kross, fall and pray for me. Fall and pray for me. Scarlett with a little bit of distraction early on. Karrion Kross getting the upper advantage. The story was Drew McIntyre's bad shoulder. He smashes him into the ring post. At one point, he plants him into the announcer's table shoulder first. Kross with a doomsday Saito on Drew McIntyre just for a two count. Then we had the Hulk Hogan moment. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Drew's getting his ass kicked in the ring. And again, this is where it was too methodical, too slow. Kross whacks Drew McIntyre with the strap in his back. And Drew McIntyre no-sells it. Well, trying to like absorb the pain. I shouldn't say it like that. Whacks him again. Gets up on his feet. I honestly, all Drew McIntyre had to do was, and it was the Hulk Hogan, it was hulking up. I mean, or he could have just, like, when he hit him, he could have been like this. Drew McIntyre hulked up. And then we get the brawl that I think people loved the most. We had dueling chops in the middle of the ring. We had dueling punches in the middle of the ring. We had dueling whips of the strap in the middle of the ring. And these two guys were beating the shit out of each other. Drew McIntyre hits a Future Shock DDT. Goes in the corner, getting ready to do the Claymore. But here comes Scarlett. And what does Scarlett do? As we said earlier, she takes out a thing of pepper spray. She maced him. Or, as Massey said earlier, hold on. Damn! She sprayed him with Massey! Mace, Massey, with the tweet of the night. I popped when I saw that. Massey. Damn! She sprayed his ass. So she empties a whole bottle. Ah, this shit's going to go back. I forgot. It resets to the beginning. That's okay. All right. So she sprays, empties out a bottle of mace on Drew McIntyre's face. He's selling like he's blinded. And Kross hits the crosshammer, gets the win. And after the match is over, you know, Drew McIntyre is selling, you know, all the pepper spray. Kross, little residual, which I liked as well. And I think probably the biggest topic from this match, if you really think about it, was Kross's hair. Kross's hair. People like, what's up with Kross's hair? Guys, you got to understand something. And this is not to defend Kross, but they're letting him grow his hair long. Problem is, he's not off TV for the next month or two. So his hair is growing in real time. So that is why you're seeing his hair at this point. Now, they could change their mind and end up cutting it. Some people want to see him go back to bald. Some people think that when he was bald, he looked even scarier. But right now, as it is, as it stands, Kross is growing his hair. So it is not grown enough yet. So this is why we have Kross with his hair. That was a big topic of conversation tonight. Yes, if you're enjoying tonight's show, take a moment, smash that like button. I would greatly appreciate it. Also, I want to give two quick shout-outs. That's no good. That's better. Giuseppe, thank you very much, my friend. He sent the 10 spot. Rest in peace, Sarah Lee. Also, podcast Legend Killers, thank you for the 2 spot. Rest in peace, Sarah Lee. And Martin Hajduk. Thank you for the 10 spot as well, my friend. Is that me? Oh, the bottom? I thought that was me. I was like, wait, that he doesn't have hair. It kind of looks like me in that picture, right? Doesn't it? Kind of looks like me. If I look like this, looks like me. So I will be matching what you contributed, and we will definitely send it to our memorial fund on Monday. So, all right, so Kross gets the win, and that was pretty much everybody's prediction. Kross needed this win. I know it pissed off the IWC. A majority of people did not like the fact that Drew lost, but Kross needed this win big time, especially since his build has been not creatively as good as WWE should have made it. So next we have Bianca Belair versus Bayley. This match was decent. I think early on it was a little bit slow. I think people needed to, you know, start getting into the match a little bit. Let me tell you something. Bayley, you know, did a great job tonight. Bianca Belair did a great job tonight. I think early on, you know, I know a lot of people were pointing out about the size of the ladders. Yes, they could have used smaller ladders and had the belt hang lower. The problem is, if you look at this, all right, yeah, this is better. When you look at that, I mean, if you use a smaller ladder, that belt has to hang much lower. And this is the first ever ladders match for a women's championship. So this is uncharted waters, not only for WWE, but uncharted waters for Bayley, uncharted waters for Bianca Belair. You know, we've had Money in the Bank matches, and if you look at, look, if I had time tonight, I would have put a side-by-side of the briefcase hanging down, and this, the briefcase is quite a bit lower. So, you know, in defense for the women tonight, you know, this is the first ladder match for the women's championship. You know, so you know, they had to, you know, handle it, and, you know, plus their height. You know, they are shorter. And this is not to criticize them, but they are shorter. I know you're going to say to me, well, you know, Rey Mysterio is the same height as them. I get it. But, you know, understand that most ladder matches that men have, especially for titles, the ladders are the same size all the time. You know, for women, they're not used to, they're not, you know, they don't regularly have matches that require going that high in the air. So it was going to be a little bit rough from time to time, but I think overall they did a great job. You know, unfortunately, though, you know, we got interference. No Asuka, no Alexa Bliss, which makes total sense, by the way. But you'd be surprised how even that crowd was tonight. Yes, it's Philly, so Philly is a little bit more biased, some areas, but you know, we had pretty even, let's go Bayley, let's go Bianca, let's go Bayley, let's go Bianca. But towards the latter part of the match, we had some interference. Bianca Belair gets the upper hand. She climbs the ladder, and if you look at this picture again, there is Io Sky and Dakota Kai. They knock Bianca off of the ladder. Bayley hits the rose plant. Bianca ends up getting wedged under the side of the ladder, and Bayley starts climbing the ladder. If you look at where Io Sky's feet are, basically Bayley put Bianca under that step, and then she started climbing the ladder, and the weight of Bayley, you know, would have kept a normal person wedged underneath. But because Bianca is so strong, she's the strongest, EST, she lifts up the ladder anyway. Bayley goes sideways. Here's where Bianca gets to use her hair a little bit. They both eventually start climbing the ladder again, and Bayley gets knocked off. Bianca gets knocked off. And then the finish, as I showed you earlier, Bianca picks up Bayley. You could still see it here. She picks up Bayley. And then as Bayley is still holding the ladder, she hits the KOD. Bianca, and you look, Bayley immediately grabs her mouth and gets the pin. So it was a decent match. I mean, I think this was a better match than Ronda Rousey, Liv Morgan, but I wouldn't have flip-flopped. Somebody asked me earlier, would I have rather seen the Extreme Rules match with Bianca and Bayley? No. I could only imagine Ronda and Liv doing extra high ladders. I don't know how that would have played out, so no need to do anything with that. So, next to last match, we have, talk to me, I quit, Edge versus Finn Balor. Finn Balor debuts a new mask, And I saw mixed reactions to it. I thought it was fine. Some people say in Pinhead. Hey, it's a different look. Not a big deal. I thought it looked cool. When you look at it in high definition, it really looks cool. You know, if you watch it on regular 480p, you know, then it looks maybe a little bit more goofy. But, you know, Finn Balor wearing the mask, Edge comes out. And, you know, there was a funny point during the match. Do you remember when we talked about this on Raw? That, you know, when Finn Balor was punching AJ Styles, you know, why don't you listen? I'm your friend. Every time he punched him, and it reminded me when the Dudleys had that match that time against the Usos. This is for your uncle. So Finn has Edge by the table. And every time Finn was bashing Edge's head into the table, there was a fan at ringside. You still suck. You still suck. You suck. It was pretty entertaining. So, but great emotion during the match. You know, every time they gave the mic to Edge, do you give up? Screw you, Finn. I don't quit. Finn Balor, I don't quit. And just going back and forth, they start brawling up the rampway. They brawl up the aisles. At one point, Edge is crotched on the railing. Now, keep in mind, we're now towards the latter part of Extreme Rules. We don't have Bray Wyatt's return yet. We don't know what we're getting. We don't know who he's going after. We don't know where he's going to appear. You know, we know White Rabbits are in the building. So now, you know, they're brawling, and you're starting to think to yourself, okay, are we going to get Bray Wyatt now? Is something going to happen now? But we don't get that. It goes in a totally, totally different direction. As they go back towards the ring, Finn Balor has complete advantage on Edge. He wedges a chair into the corner, goes to whip Edge into the chair, but Edge reverses it, gets Finn, and basically Edge is starting to get a little momentum now with Finn Balor. Unfortunately, though, Edge hits Finn Balor with a couple of chair shots, puts the educator on Finn, and Finn is teasing, I quit. He's like, I. And next thing you know, here comes Damian Priest. Damian Priest shows up, and Michael Cole's like, I knew that son of a bitch would show up. Said something like that. Like, he shows up, and Damian Priest gets involved. Here comes Dominic Mysterio as well. He gets involved. So now we have both of them there. Edge still ends up getting the upper hand. Edge goes in the corner and starts setting up to do the spear. Rhea Ripley, man. Rhea Ripley, got to give her props, because that could have easily turned into a disaster. What she did that was so good was she cuffed the rope first. She cuffed it first, because if she would have cuffed Edge's wrist first and then start finagling with the rope, Edge's other hand is still free. I know, you know, storyline WWE, man's not going to hit a woman. Very, very rare when it ever happens. But by having Rhea do the rope first, Edge is in the corner getting ready to hit the spear. He doesn't realize Rhea Ripley's behind him. So Rhea Ripley, after first half of it is done, she grabs Edge's wrist. Edge turns around. He doesn't know what the hell's going on. And she's scrambling 3 seconds. Literally 3 seconds, she had his wrist handcuffed. So Rhea drops down. Edge is looking at her. And then you see Judgment Day behind Edge, ready to beat the shit out of him. So they start attacking him. And here comes Rey Mysterio. Rey Mysterio shows up. And for the first time, Dominic Mysterio puts his hands and his feet on his dad. He starts beating the shit out of his father. And Michael Cole, if you go back, I've always been a fan of Michael Cole, but he was really, really, I mean, look, people really popped for Michael Cole's commentary work towards the end of the Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar, you know, when he was just saying, just give up. Remember that? I mean, he was good, almost as good here as well. I mean, just how he was reacting to Dominic calling Judgment Day sick, and Dominic is laying out his dad. So what ends up happening? Beth Phoenix shows up. Beth Phoenix starts whacking Finn Balor with a Singapore cane. She starts whacking Damian Priest with a Singapore cane. It actually looked good. It looked good. The Singapore cane started breaking. Dominic hits the ring. That doesn't look good. That looks good. Dominic hits the ring, and Beth Phoenix is looking at him. He's too much of a pussy, so he drops down. But behind Beth Phoenix is Rhea Ripley. Rhea Ripley walks up to Beth. Beth turns around. They are face to face, and we think they're about to go at it. And next thing you know, Beth Phoenix is taking care of business with Rhea Ripley. Now, remember, Rhea Ripley had the key. Somehow, Beth Phoenix was able to get the key from Rhea Ripley. So she grabs the key. She uncuffs Edge. Edge hits a spear, and he's getting the upper advantage for Finn Balor, and he tells Beth Phoenix, go get a chair. Unfortunately, that would be the big mistake on Edge's part. Because what ends up happening is Rhea Ripley takes out Beth Phoenix. And Judgment Day start taking out Edge. So what ends up happening is we have Edge in the ring being held down by Dominic Mysterio and Damian Priest. Finn Balor hits three coup de grace, and he's giving Edge one last chance to say, I quit. This is your last chance, Edge. Say, I quit. Edge, we think, may quit. He says, go to hell. So, Rhea Ripley goes and gets two chairs. She puts one chair under Beth Phoenix, and she basically, they're teasing that they're going to hit Beth Phoenix with the chair if Edge doesn't say, I quit. So Beth Phoenix is laid out. They're holding Edge. Edge, your last chance. If he doesn't say, I quit, Rhea Ripley's going to give Beth Phoenix a concerto. So finally, Edge says, I quit. He says, I quit. He gives up. Oh, we didn't hear you, Edge. Say it a little louder. He quits, says, I quit. Match is over. But they're not letting Edge go, and Rhea Ripley is not dropping the chair. So, you know, oh, wait, I said I quit. Edge couldn't have been that stupid. Edge actually thought that they were not going to hit the concerto to Beth Phoenix anyway. I don't think so. Maybe. But no, what ends up happening is Rhea Ripley, I can't show it to you. We don't want any copyrights. Too long. But she hits Beth Phoenix with the concerto. Beth Phoenix is laid out. Michael Cole is selling it like the sick son of a bitches. Get help, get this, get that. And Beth Phoenix is written off for the foreseeable future. So really, really good. Problem is, at this point, we're like, okay, maybe we're going to get Bray Wyatt now. Is he going to be picking up the scraps? Maybe going after Edge. Maybe he chases away Judgment Day. Maybe it's a whole segment on its own. No, at this point is where we get, if I remember correctly, we get The Miz, that last segment with The Miz and Dexter Lumis and Gritty. Then we see the video package for Charlotte Flair. And now we're up to the main event, the Fight Pit match. Now the crowd, I think, is getting a little bit impatient because the crowd is chanting, we want Wyatt, we want Wyatt, but we don't get Bray Wyatt yet. Daniel Cormier comes out. And as I showed you earlier, Seth Rollins, a little bit of an homage to RVD, and even doing the RVD fingers when he did the splash off the side of the fight pit. Match was decent. One very, very scary moment. Daniel Cormier, I think, did an okay job. I think he was not a factor. You know, they teased a little bit of him maybe getting into the face of Seth Rollins, but I don't think anybody really cared at that point. And you got to understand, too, at this point now, we're at like 11:05, if I remember, or 11 o'clock. And WWE usually doesn't go past 11 with their events, especially we're only six matches tonight. So we're already at 3 hours. So this has got to pick up a little bit. So the fight pit match, I think a lot of people expected strictly UFC. I'll be honest with you. I did not expect the amount of wrestling that we got. But we got fighting. We got wrestling as well. We had RKOs. We had curb stomps, suplexes. We had pretty much your regular wrestling match, but inside a fight pit with a second level. So early on in the match, Riddle hits an RKO, goes for a second one, but Rollins hits a curb stomp. Ultimately, Rollins climbs the cage, the pit, but you don't win that way. You win by pin or submission. So even Michael Cole is saying, like, what is he climbing the pit for? Like, what is he going to do? So he climbs, and he's standing on the top of the pit, and there's a walkway. It almost looks like the width of a scaffold. And he's taunting the fans. He's taunting Riddle. Riddle gets up, and Riddle's just looking at him and was saying, like, what is he going to do, Rollins? He's not going to just jump off, because all Riddle's got to do is just move out of the way. He's not going to climb over, because you don't win that way. So Riddle starts climbing the pit. And instead of Rollins climbing down on the opposite side, Rollins and Riddle start going at it at the top of the pit. And we get a buckle bomb that looked a little bit scary. It looked like Riddle may have landed a little bit lower than he should have. We see an RKO. We see a curb stomp. Then we get a scary moment. Riddle is at the second level with Rollins. And Riddle gets the upper hand, hits the RKO. Now, Rollins falls off the second tier onto the mat. Now, he grabbed the side and rolled off, so didn't get hurt. I mean, that was planned exactly like he wanted to. But Rollins now is laid out on the mat. And if you go back and you watch it, it is a little goofy. Daniel Cormier is counting Rollins. Meanwhile, Matt Riddle is standing on the second tier facing Rollins. And Daniel Cormier is still counting Seth Rollins. He's up to seven. And then he just stops. He stops and he starts focusing on Riddle, like, what are you doing? Doesn't fucking matter. You count the person who's out. I guess you could win by knockout as well. So Daniel Cormier counts to seven and stops. So Riddle dives off and does the floating bro off the top of the pit onto Seth Rollins. I hope Seth Rollins is okay, because I don't know if you saw it the way I did, but it looked like Matt Riddle slipped a little. And it looked like Matt Riddle landed from the top of the pit onto Rollins' ribs. Seth Rollins started moving sideways as Riddle was coming down, but that is so freaking fast. I don't know if he got injured or not, because the match ended pretty quickly after this. The only reason why I think Seth Rollins may not have been injured is because what happened at the end of the match. Right after this, Matt Riddle puts submission move a lot. He locks onto Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins picks up Riddle, Matt Riddle. Matt Riddle's not letting go of the hold. Now, I'm thinking if Seth Rollins got pretty injured on that or broke a rib or something, there ain't no way Seth Rollins is going to pick him up almost like dead weight. He picks him up, and he starts wailing Riddle, smashing him against the side of the cage, the pit, to try to get Matt Riddle to break the submission move. Matt Riddle doesn't break it. He hits like two sides of the ring, actually like drops Matt Riddle almost like a powerbomb. Matt Riddle does not break. And Matt Riddle ends up winning. Seth Rollins taps out. It was very, very quick right after that. So what did Mr. S say? Riddle made the show a happy ending. How are you going to have Bray come out after such a sick, sad ending? I don't think it was a sick or a sad ending. As we said yesterday with predictions, even though Seth Rollins, you know, finally got a win on a premium live event / pay-per-view in quite some time on the last show, this was a fight pit match. And the whole storyline is Seth Rollins, he's out of his element a little bit. So if he loses, it's not as big of a deal. He's out of his element. But Matt Riddle ends up winning the match. And here's where Michael Cole, as we said at the beginning of the show, Michael Cole is playing off like, all right, you know, thank you all for tuning in to Extreme Rules. I'm Michael Cole. And then the lights go out. The lights go out. And, you know, Michael Cole, I mean, he's been doing fabulous on a mic, but this was so forced. Are we still on the air? We all knew. And that's when, as you know, we don't need to do the whole recap again. As we said before, Bray Wyatt starts singing his song. No music, just the a cappella. And thank God he didn't do White Rabbit. Trust me, I don't think Bray Wyatt would have sounded good trying to mimic Jefferson Airplane. But he's doing he's got the whole world in his hands. Crowd is eating it up. And, you know, we get the visuals of the characters for Bray Wyatt. They didn't do any visuals of the Wyatt family, which is good. And look, we will never forget Brody Lee. Trust me, Bray Wyatt will never forget Brody Lee, and WWE will never forget him as well. But for tonight, the best thing that they did was not focus on the individual human members of the Wyatt family. This was more, in my opinion, Sister Abigail, the cartoon characters, the puppets, you know, it was more of that. But, you know, we got, you know, the music from the Firefly Funhouse, very, very warped and distorted, almost like a little bit of what we used to hear when he was around Alexa Bliss doing it as well. But a lot of visual. And up the rampway, you see like this glowing light. It looks almost like a door. And he comes out. And as I showed you at the beginning of the show, crowd made it so much more fun. Holy shit chance. And you could see. If you really look closely at Bray Wyatt, that guy must have felt like $1 million. That guy, you know, and it's not just, you know, let's make this clear. You know, and this is something I don't even think I need to say to you, but I'll say it anyway. You know, when I said at the beginning of the show that of anybody in wrestling over the last decade, it's not even close. The most merch that I've ever given away or bought for myself has been Bray Wyatt. Wyatt family, Firefly, whatever it is, Fiend, Bray Wyatt. I still have like 6 or 7 of these ceramic Fiend bobbleheads, you know, which obviously Foco gave to me for nothing, which was nice. WWE has given me stuff. But my point is that, you know, let's not start exaggerating here. Bray Wyatt has had a pretty damn good WWE career so far. The amount of merch alone that has been, the guy was number one for a very long time. The guy has had, you know, his moments. The problem is when it was good. When it should have been great, it was good. But when it was bad, it was awful. The Goldberg stuff, the, you know, Vince McMahon insisting on the red lighting was awful. Seth Rollins just did that interview with Ariel Helwani and talked about it. He's like, it's nothing against Bray, but the Supernatural stuff, you know, they had a really difficult time, and that match that they had in the the Hell in a Cell was awful. So when it was bad, it was awful. And, you know, but Bray has had success. I mean, let's not forget, you remember that moment when you had the Wyatt family and the New Day in the middle of the ring and the crowd was chanting, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit. You know, it's, we've had moments with the Wyatt family that the crowd just absolutely loved. But there's so much more that should have been done that wasn't done. And I think tonight, truthfully, it's not just Philly. It's not just because absence makes the heart grow fonder. I mean, people are just really, really just excited to see this guy back. And, you know, the Shield also, oh my God, the Shield, that moment was even better. I mean, we had the cinematic match with the New Day. What about that moment with the Shield? I mean, think about that moment when they were on it. They didn't even touch each other. I mean, at least the New Day and the Wyatt family, they actually fought and the crowd was losing their shit. The Shield and the Wyatt family didn't even touch each other. They just stood and did nothing. And the crowd that night were doing a holy shit chance. That, I'm telling you, man, you know, the guy has had some tremendous moments. Now, let's see what they do. If there's only, if you want to be concerned about anything, this, I will leave you with this. I'm excited. I'm amped. If you have been paying attention to all my deep dives that I've been doing with every teaser, every Easter egg, every little thing that has had to do with Bray Wyatt over the last month. And believe me, that was not easy to put that all together in short periods of time. The reason why I did it, not just because of all you, but because I dug this so much that I was having fun. Trying to crack this and scramble this and reversing this audio and calling this number and pulling this website and decoding this. When you are into something, it's fun. You know, it's not even work. You know, when you're enjoying what you're doing and having fun, it doesn't even feel like work. So that in itself just shows you the excitement value. If there's anything that you should maybe start thinking about that might be a little concerning is, who's he going to feud with? And the reason why I say that is because I think for a lot of you out there, I think many of you feel he should be the one to beat Roman Reigns. Not Cody Rhodes, maybe Sami Zayn in some people's eyes right now, but not Cody Rhodes, not The Rock. A lot of people think that Bray Wyatt should be the one to dethrone Roman Reigns. And my question to you is, do you really think that Bray Wyatt is going to feud with Roman Reigns anytime soon? My answer is no. And if it does happen, do you think, does it feel like Roman Reigns is going to lose that championship in the very near future? Sure, not a crown jewel. He will have the titles at least then, but even if you want to go to Survivor Series, you think that Roman Reigns will not be champion by WrestleMania? So when you start really thinking about Bray Wyatt, who does he feud with? Seriously, what you should do is you should start thinking to yourself, five people. Name five people in WWE right now. Not 6 months, not 3 month build, right now, that he could feud with and you would think it would be absolutely awesome. And don't just randomly pick people because you think it's going to be a good match. We could say Seth Rollins. Okay, why would Bray Wyatt return now for Seth Rollins? You know, when you start really dissecting this, who's his opponents? Who does he feud with that really puts you over the top? See, like when Cody Rhodes returned to WWE, people were fine with him versus Seth Rollins. If he didn't get injured, people would have been fine if he feuded with Roman Reigns. There are people, you know, people would have been fine with Cody Rhodes versus AJ Styles. People would have been fine with Cody Rhodes versus several people. But when you start thinking about Bray Wyatt and his persona and being like the leader of, you know, us or the world, or he's going to be the, you know, a cult figure. Who in WWE does he rectify for our satisfaction? See, got to be careful with this, because think about some of the vignettes. Who ruined the world? Who killed the world? You did. You did. We all did. So it's not a lock that Bray Wyatt is going to be clear-cut babyface for all of us. For all we know, he could get on the mic and totally start trashing the fans immediately, because who killed the world? You did. I mean, that's the whole premise of the shirt. So why would he come back for the people who ruined the world? Right? So there's a lot to digest here. So it's one thing being back. Now it's, okay, now what? Now what? And I don't think that's a crazy question to ask. You know, I always invite you all to post comments in the comment section after the shows are done. Some of you do, some of you don't. But I would love for everyone out there to spend a few seconds and in the comment section, pick one from Raw and one from SmackDown. And who would you say would be a great feud for him right now that could happen? You know, Roman Reigns, you know, it's not happening. Crown Jewel's coming up. Logan Paul. They're not moving away from that. So you start thinking about the Raw roster, you start thinking of SmackDown. Sure, there's some matches that we know would be great, but why would he go after a particular person? So when you throw a name out there, you got to think about, okay, why? Why return now? Why do this? Why go after this person? So it's nice to have him back, but now what? And I think that is a huge question. Now what? So, all right, guys, we're at 97 minutes. Don't forget, you know, Extreme Rules just went off the air. Right now, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. Thank God it's Saturday night, not Sunday night. But remember, in less than 24 hours, where are you? I know I put you, oh, here it is. In less than 24 hours, we have the sit-down, which means at 8.05 p.m. Eastern, right here, Sunday night on YouTube, I will be here and I will be having question and answers and discussion, and everybody who is live, you dictate what we talk about. I show up tomorrow with a blank piece of paper. So think about what went down tonight. Think about Bray Wyatt. Think about, you know, other stuff. You know, you don't have to just talk about WWE and tonight. We could talk AEW, whatever's on your mind. You want to talk about Moxley signing a 5-year extension with AEW. We could talk about that tomorrow, but start thinking about what you would like for me to get into Sunday night. So we will continue this conversation tomorrow. Plus, I get another, you know, 19 hours to think about this, and maybe I will have some answers tomorrow. So, yeah, for everyone out there, you know, especially those where it's late evening, early morning right now, get some sleep, because I'm going to do so as well. So I hope you could join me Sunday night, 8.05 p.m. Eastern, right here for the sit-down. I want to thank everybody earlier who sent in some contributions. Like I said, I will match that, and I will donate that to Sarah Lee Memorial Fund on Monday. And anybody who posts super thanks later on, I'll add that too as well. And we'll do that again on Sunday night. So if you enjoyed this recap, because believe me, I tell you, putting all these pitches together was not easy in real time. But you know what? Extreme Rules was enough fun that, you know, it's all good, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you enjoyed Bray Wyatt's return. I am very, very happy. And, you know, you just think about ultimately Cody Rhodes is going to be coming back. And then we got the road to WrestleMania. We have AEW stuff to be excited about. It's a really good time right now to be a wrestling fan. It really is, you know, especially with some of the creative changes in WWE. So this is a fun time, really fun time for wrestling. So, all right, everybody, much love as always. Thank you as always for the support. If you know anyone out there that might enjoy the channel, let them know about it. If you're not a subscriber, consider subscribing. And I'm out of here. Be well. Stay safe. Ciao.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the host. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who claim they care the most for your life. And now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.